This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Islamic banking is now mainstream, but is the party over? ESG, retail redditors, impact investing, theme specific, not to mention crowded markets and competitors. Joining us today to share their journey is Ekwan Mokhzani Muhammad, Chief Executive Officer of MBank Islamic Berhad. Welcome. Now, you're no stranger to the Breakfast Grill. You were here 2.5 years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I was here. It was my pleasure and time really does fly.
We talked a lot about the impact of 1MDB. Now, we won't talk about that because we're lurching from one crisis now to another, which is the COVID pandemic. And so I just want to ask you point blank, how is the bank managing during this difficult time?
So for banks, generally, of course, we are seeing our financials, be it from revenue, asset quality, earnings standpoint, being adversely impacted. For instance, you see the asset quality. I think the industry is looking at about an impairment ratio of about 1.7%, and it may deteriorate further in 2021. And of course, our earnings generally have contracted. I think industry is looking at about 20 to 30% contraction. And of course, when we talk about our people, no doubt banks are actually not completely faceless. There are people working behind the scenes, and they are, to a certain extent, frontliners. Because our priority now is, of course, to make sure that we are able to weather the challenges of COVID-19, at the same time playing our role to assist our customers who are facing many challenges. Yeah, because you know, businesses are adversely impacted, cash flow restrictions. So it's not only impacting their business, but also impacting, you know, the entire ecosystem, including employment. So henceforth, banks have come to the fore to assist customers. Amongst others, you would recall that last year, the first government or Banegara mandated scheme was to assist individuals and SMEs by providing 6 months of moratorium on loans and financing payment. Even after that, there was a repayment assistance scheme, which started from October until end of November. In addition to that, there was recently the targeted repayment assistance, and it will continue until end of June this year. And, you know, similarly, it's about giving payment holiday for 3 months and reducing payment installments for the next 6 months. So we are providing various avenues for you to apply for these various assistance schemes, you know, through our website, contact centers, branches. And if you're SME, you may contact your relationship manager in the future.
Right. So I want to just have a discussion on impairments, right? Because looking at your first half 2021 numbers, you recorded an impairment of about 160 million ringgit. That's three times what it was in full year 2020 for the first half same period. But what is interesting is of the 160, if you compare it with the overall group, it was 306. So nearly more than half of the impairment is attributed to Islamic banking. Can you give us a sense, why is there such an outsized contribution of impairments on the Islamic banking business? And where do you see impairments shaping up in the next years ahead?
So there are two perspectives here. One is when it comes to impairment, we have to look at it from a historical standpoint. And then secondly, under the new accounting standards, MFRS 9, it's all about taking an anticipatory forward-looking position. So, you know, historically, when I was a rusty old accountant, I remember it was very much historical basis. But things have changed. It's also about making impairment or provision for anticipated losses. Yeah? Now, secondly, it's really the composition of the balance sheet of MBank Islamic. Now, historically, more than 40% of our portfolio was in higher purchase. So higher purchase is actually a fixed rate portfolio. So it's only now we have moderated and diversified our balance sheet. So MBank Islamic balance sheet is now a bit more balanced. You know, for instance, SMEs make up 20% of my financing book. HP makes up in the mid-teens and mortgage about 20%. I will ASB find a bit more balance. So inevitably, because of the composition of my fixed rate portfolio, in vis-a-vis the group is actually larger. So consequently, the impact can be greater. So that's one. And then secondly, is if you look at my corporate side, I do have got three or four quite chunky exposure. This came from the legacy practices. And because these are chunky exposure, and then, you know, the industries they are in are actually facing challenges. So, you know, taking on board the need to have a forward-looking position. So we need to put in more provision because of, you know, the nature of the portfolio and some of these legacy chunky financing which I have in my balance sheet.
I mean, the question here is diversification, right? When I listen to you, you basically shifted your portfolio away to kind of reduce your exposure, correct me if I'm wrong, or you're trying to adjust that portfolio correctly. What are the implications to the overall margin and contribution to the group? Because when I looked at when you started a business, right, Islamic Finance was contributing 16% of profit after tax, 32% of gross financing, not highly efficient. But if I move it to 6 years now ahead, you're now at 19% only, right? That isn't really the transition. Is that a function of a specific strategy to de-risk the portfolio?
Okay, so absolutely right. So initially, as I mentioned, that our portfolio is very much input in high purchase and also corporate financing. Yeah, so that resulted in us having all this chunky facility. So you got one facility going bad, it's going to adversely impact the P&L. So what we've done, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, was to revisit our strategy. So that's where we look at segmental focus to improve the income drivers, reducing our cost of fund and expenses, diversifying our balance sheet profile, and also improving our prudential limits. And we also introduced some products which the Mbank Islamic side didn't have, like, you know, trade products, hedging products, foreign currency products. And we didn't even have this IUTA license, which allowed us to distribute Islamic unit trust. We didn't have those basic products. So we introduced them. And in addition to that, we thought that, okay, how is it that we can also add value to the group by introducing differentiating products and targeting niche segments, which typically gravitate towards Islamic banking. So we did all those things. Now, although this statistic you mentioned, 16% now to 19%, I think that may be slightly misleading. And that 19%, if I understand correctly, and that is simply because of the position that we have for FY21. And mind you, our financial year is in March. So actually, if you look at our FY20, March 2020.
Yeah, you're at 25%, right?
Yeah, our profit after tax is about 24, about 25%. Yeah. It's only for this year because the impairment that we took and hit our profit after tax is a bit disproportionate compared to our overall contribution to the group. So I think once things have normalized, so our contribution to the group, I think, will be easy about 23 to 25%, which is, you know, a far cry compared to when I first joined at about 16%. And all of this, you know, happened because we had a conscious strategy. I think about 5 years ago when we had a new group CEO, Dr. Sami came on board, so I worked with him together to re-strategize, more segmental focus, and trying to targeting niche segments. And it has actually, bear fruit as manifested through our last year's financial. This year, maybe a bit slightly misleading.
But if you look at your peers and compare your performance relative to a lot of the Malaysian-based Islamic banks, actually, when you look at the numbers, they don't really stand out or even are in the top quartile, be it your cost-income ratio, your return on equity is, you know, kind of a middle single digit. Some of your peers are high single digits. What is driving that lack of competitiveness in terms of the financial?
Yeah. I think so. September this year, our cost-income ratio is the third lowest.
You're right. Yeah.
So the first quarter of cost income ratio.
Yep.
Our impairment ratio is about 1.7%, admittedly not the best, but we've got one chunky loan. So once we resolve this, we hope to resolve this within this calendar year. So that will bring down the impairment ratio to about 1%. Our CASA ratio, we hovered at around, you know, low 30s or mid 30s. And that was a strategic reason for December last year. So our CASA ratio is, I would say, definitely within the top four or top six. So it fluctuates quite easily. ROE, you know, something that we're definitely working on. Now, last year, FY20 was supposed to close at about 11%, to be honest. But then we had this FY19 impairment and forward-looking expected credit loss. So this year, you know, I think all banks, except for a couple, have been adversely impacted. So actually, when we compare ourselves, some of these indicators, whether from a CASA ratio, impairment ratio, our cost to income ratio, the composition of the balance sheet, actually we fared quite well.
Yeah, but you know, when you started, clearly your position is that it's not about being number one or number two, because currently you're, I think, six or eight in the market, right? So. And I think that is that a strategic intention to be niche player, to very much just play in specific spaces, okay, as opposed to just being the market leader across the board?
Yeah, exactly. So this question of market leader, so we don't believe in growing for the sake of growing. Yeah, we believe in growing profitably and in a responsible and sustainable manner. Because to grow market share is not difficult. All you need to do is bring down your financing cost and you increase your deposit cost, but you got no money, you cannot make money for the shareholders. So that's not sustainable. So that's not why we are here. So to us, it's about focusing on certain key ratios like cost-to-income ratio, impairment ratio, CASA ratio, our ROE, definitely our capital, our liquidity. So the target is to be at least within the top half of the second quartile. Ideally, in the first quarter, but you know, as long as we can operate within the high part of the second quarter, I think that is the level that we hope to sustain ourselves.
So what are the marching orders from the group? Where do they want to see Islamic in the overall portfolio? How much do they want Islamic to contribute to the overall group performance?
We're quite comfortable now, about 23-25%. But in terms of the asset, I guess in line with the initial aspiration, about 40%. I think about mid-40% asset-wise. Mm-hmm. Banking-wise, because please bear in mind, we also have insurance companies as well, and the investment bank. So if you just look at the total asset, banking asset. So I think we're about in the high 30s. But when you look at the 20-odd percent of profit contribution, that is over the entire group, which includes insurance and investment banking and fund management and what have you.
And we talk about strategies moving forward, right? For Islamic specifically, are there unique strategies that you will adopt, be it digital, that are kind of decoupled from the group or unique to what Islamic does specifically?
Right. There are a couple of things here. One is from a product perspective. Firstly, is when it comes to product. So there are certain products which are only available in the Islamic space, or predominantly in the Islamic space. For instance, we've got a current account, which we call a savings account, which is the MWAFIQ savings account. So that's only offered in the Islamic space. Secondly, is investment account, only offered in the Islamic space. ESB financing, predominantly an Islamic-oriented product. Then there is this Sharia-compliant SME financing scheme. So these are differentiating factors which are only available in the Islamic space. The second dimension I wish to share is really from the segmental perspective. So there are certain segments which naturally gravitate towards Islamic. For instance, government, public bodies, municipal council, certain educational institutions. And then moving forward, where we're looking to work towards as part of our sustainability agenda is to help the small folks. So allow me to explain. Now, banks keep talking about helping the SMEs. And there's about almost a million SMEs in the country now, nowadays. But actually, it's more oriented towards the largest, small and medium. But you know, the startups, the micro SMEs, these are actually untapped segments. And we've been talking about it, leveraging technology and what have you. But it's not as simple as it seems. So for MBank Islamic, we have started, I think about a year and a bit ago, what we call the SME Biz Startup Eye, which is only available at MBank Islamic. And that is for customers who are in startup, business startups, right? So we have started it. So the portfolio size is about 60 million. And so now moving forward, we're looking to expand it. We have to do it very carefully because these are high-risk segments and to see whether we can assist, I call them entrepreneurs, although they're really those who are in the e-commerce space. Because now COVID-19 is actually compelling behavioral change. So henceforth, we do see a lot of people are going to e-commerce. You know, they can sell, you know, food stuff, apparel, cosmetics, and what have you. So we want to start to see whether this is a small segment that we can to assist. And maybe, you know, with more data, with seasonality, then we can expand this. So these are some of the things which the Islamic banks has been, in your word, decoupled from.
On the Breakfast Grill today, we have Ikwan Mokhzani Muhammad, Chief Executive Officer of MBank Islamic Berhad. When we come back, we will discuss the Islamic finance market in Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. Just a moment ago, we were discussing the strategy of MBank Islamic Berhad with its CEO, Ikwan Muhammad Mokhzani. Now, when you take a step back, do you think that the addressable market for Islamic finance has shifted a lot since its inception a couple of years back ago?
I guess initially when the Islamic banking sector started, it was still quite nascent. There were lack of familiarity. So now I would say that the Islamic banking sector is already part of the mainstream. So I think easily it constitute about, 35-36% of the market. So, you know, it's mainstream, whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim, if there is a awareness and then you are keen. So there's no stopping you know, people from taking up Islamic banking.
Yeah, so this mainstreaming is fascinating because it comes to the question of the business model to deliver the products, right? Do you see Islamic banking as a portfolio of a suite of products that are including conventional and so on and so forth? Or do you find that there's a lot of opportunity for just pure play Islamic banks?
Okay. So firstly, Islamic banks are still banks. So let's make it clear. There are a lot of homogenous products. So whether they are Islamic or conventional. So these are common products, whether it's mortgage, hire purchase, ESB financing, credit card. So these are homogenous. So whether you take Islamic or conventional, predominantly they are the same. Now, having said that, there are certain features I want to highlight for Islamic finance, which may not be too apparent. So for instance, when you take a conventional loan, variable rate pricing, so actually you are subjected to the movement of interest rates. Now, of course, interest rates now are low, so you may not feel it. But remember in 97, interest rates went as high as 13, 15, I don't know, 17%. Now, if, when you take conventional loans, so obviously you're completely subjected to the movement of interest rates. Now, for Islamic financing, we do offer a variable Islamic financing. And it is actually priced as, you know, base rate plus a spread, for instance. But one thing which is not too apparent is that actually we actually impose a cap to the profit rate. So it could be, you know, 9.9%, 12%. So it depends on the bank and on the product. So when you think about it, if 97 crisis, I mean, God forbid, does recur, when you take Islamic financing, your financing cost is actually capped. So that's one. Secondly is the compounding effect. When you take conventional loans, when you have got amounts which are in arrears, then the amount is actually compounded. For Islamic financing, that element is absent. There is no compounding. So that is one part. Now, secondly, is on this differentiator. So in MBank Group, we've been thinking very hard that we accept the fact that they are homogenous products and we will live with it. But this is where I mentioned about introducing some differentiating products. So I listed down three or four earlier. Mm. And also about targeting niche segments. So it's a, you know, true stream approach, the homogenous and the so-called unique products or segments. But, you know, we are here as part of the entire banking ecosystem because Islamic banks are still banks.
And the question about products that are niche and unique, right, that plays into a lot of themes happening now where people are talking about customization or very thematic themes like ESG, impact investing. How does that interplay now with Islamic finance and banking?
So the industry has gotten together. We have formed what we call a community of practitioners under the auspices of Bank Negara Malaysia. So there's a notion, what we call a value-based intermediation. What it means is that as a bank, we are intermediary. Currently, we are a credit intermediary. So we want to intermediate credit or resources with certain value. So it's called VBI. Yeah.
Yep.
I do concede is very similar to sustainability. Good things are not exclusive to any group, but there are certain key differences between sustainability and BBI. And I'll touch a bit more on BBI later. So BBI is about getting Islamic banks to look at our business from the tenets of PPP, people, planet, and prosperity. Yeah. It is about the tenets of Sharia, which is do good, avoid evil. It is about Islamic financial institution fulfilling the higher objectives of Sharia, markets of Sharia. It's about looking beyond profit motivation as our reason for existence. So this is where VBI, there's actually a strategy document in place. We have got the impact assessment framework in place. In fact, we have also launched certain sectoral guidelines to guide financial institutions, be it Islamic or conventional, to assess specific segments. I chaired the working group, actually, to come up with sector guidelines for palm oil, renewable energy, and energy efficiency. And then the next cohort of guidelines would be in three other sectors. So we have actually achieved, produced certain deliverables. Obviously, we are guided by the moral compass provided by Sharia.
Mm.
Number two, there is an express focus on the real economy. Number three, it's about community empowerment and entrepreneur mindset. Okay, so I do concede that, you know, there is a lot of parallel, but ultimately, as Islamic banks, VBI is about being Sharia-oriented. It's also about focusing on the real economy.
VBI is not a new concept. It's been around for quite some time in Malaysia. And the next question I have is, do you think it needs more bite? Does it have an impact to how we position ourselves in the broader global space about being a leader in Islamic finance then?
I would respond to that. And how is it that we manifest BBI in practice, right? What it means is, you know, in a broad sense, it's about going beyond profit, right? So I think if I were to take a step back, if we want to become value-based intermediation, it is imperative for Islamic banks to change. It is imperative for us to repurpose, reposition, and recalibrate our strategy. And, you know, in some ways, COVID-19 is compelling us to do so, and in some ways, accelerating the embracement of, amongst others, technology, digital, and also our own values. Yeah? So this is where, and you talk about, you know, about customization. So this is where it's now forcing us to look at how we deal with customers, you know, through our delivery channels. Through our offering. So it's about solutions rather than product push. It's about beyond financing. Yeah. Of course, as banks, our primary role is financing, credit. So for MBank Islamic, for instance, we do as part of our, you know, bigger agenda for the MBank Biz Conference. It's about building capacity for SME customers. For this year, end of last year, for instance, and we can do this year, the theme is about digitalization, IR 4.0, and halal. And also about creating market access through our MBiz Hub. And we also want to touch about how do we prepare our customers beyond COVID-19. Okay, so this is where, you know, programs that we offer, such as the MBank BizRace or Biz Conference, will help our customers. Then when we look at our internal self, it's about looking at our employees, about taking care of their welfare, and it's about future-proofing them, it's about giving them new skills. And equally important is ensuring that their KPIs, job description, roles and responsibilities also reflect the need for us to consider the interests of all stakeholders. And, you know, ultimately, it's also making sure that our policies, our processes are able to accommodate our aspiration in this area.
But in your view, when you take a step back, there are a couple of moving parts now happening, right? You're seeing 40 interested bidders for 5 digital banking licenses. One could argue there's a lot of competition in the market as well in terms of Islamic banking. Do you see consolidation happening, and is this ripe for disruption then?
I'm not sure, you know, about disruption, because there is something for market forces to dictate, obviously. Mm. But in terms of competition, you know, it's always there. And it will continue to be there. And of course, because, you know, digital is even more prevalent. So as you rightly pointed out, you know, people do see it as a niche. So as a banker, it is not my role to, you know, bury my head in the sand. But I do genuinely believe that we can work together with some of the fintech, for instance, and we have partnership with a couple of fintechs. But some advantages which bank have, I would say there are two. One is really trust. Okay, we've been there for many, many years. And then secondly, it's about collection. Having said that, doesn't mean that we're ignoring them completely. We do appreciate some of the strength of these digital banks. But at the same time, it is important for us to bear this in mind. And what we do is to actually embrace technology. We may not be digital banks per se, but, you know, of course, we are. And we continue to adopt and leverage on digital so that we remain competitive. So if previously, you know, we spoke about automation, now it's about digital. And of course, when you speak about fintech and digital banks, about big data, and that doesn't preclude us from actually you know, using all this technology and capabilities to help our own business.
Today on The Breakfast Grill was Ikhwan Mokhzani Muhammad, Chief Executive Officer of MBank Islamic Berhad, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.